my 5-year-old, almost 6-year-old, came out of the bedroom last night in his pajamas and was like, Mom, I was reading a book about weather and I came up with some really good jokes. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot wait to hear these jokes. And he said, what's a tornado's favorite game?
What?
Twister!
Oh!
He totally came up with that himself!
Great one!
He totally did it. And then the second one's actually my favorite. What did the lightning bolt say to the other lightning bolt?
What?
We're shocking. I feel like that should be our new tagline.
We're shocking.
Mouthy, messy, mandatory. We're shocking.
Hey.
Yeah?
You're listening to Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. I'm Roni.
And I'm Katie. Roseanne Barr publicly imploded.
Yes.
We were shocked. Yeah, we were all shocked.
She went off the deeper end. So she tweeted the other day, I think everyone has seen this by now, but she basically compared Valerie Jarrett, who was once a senior advisor to Obama, to an ape, and some type of love child between the Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes. And Twitter just came for her. Everyone just had an immediate response to this. And what happened that was so unusual was that ABC actually canceled Roseanne's show.
Oh yeah, they meted out swift justice. It was not like, well, we're gonna take some meetings and do some focus groups and see what people have to say. They were like, no, absolutely not.
It makes me feel that maybe ABC was just, they had like a checklist of things that you cannot do. Like once you pass this point, we're gonna cancel you. And they were just waiting. They're like, yep, she did it. Like, that's it.
I bet it was written into her contract. May not compare African-American human beings to apes
right.
anymore, Roseanne. Because you know this is not the first time she's done this.
No, no, no.
In 2013, she compared Susan Rice, Obama's national security advisor, to an ape.
Yes, and she's really fond of that analogy. She also, in the same tweet storm, which went on for a very long time, said that Hillary Clinton should commit suicide. She basically tweeted that out with a really lovely, you know, photo and suggested that Chelsea Clinton Jesus. Was part of a Jewish conspiracy. So she was just one by one. And actually, before ABC canceled this officially, the show for next season, Wanda Sykes, who was a consulting producer on the show, said she would not be returning to Roseanne. So she made a decision right away, and ABC's statement basically said it was an aberrant, repugnant, and inconsistent type of behavior for their values, and that they decided to cancel the show.
Which is great, which is all great. We're all happy that Roseanne is canceled. I mean, not we are all happy. A lot of people are really pissed that Roseanne is canceled. And actually, this kind of brings us to a segment that we wanted to try called Pro Con Pro.
Yeah.
And this is where we talk about what's good about Roseanne being canceled and what is not quite so good about Roseanne being canceled. So I will go first. Good news, ABC discovered that it has a moral compass and fired her immediately. The bummer part about that is that before they discovered that they had a moral compass, they first gave a huge, massive, enormous platform to a screaming racist, and not just any kind of screaming racist, but like a folksy, normalizing, neighborizing racist.
Right. And some of the writers on the show and the studio executives felt that they were giving a platform to a different voice, and they were planning on handling the subject matter with diversity and to try to get to the subject in a nuanced way, so that there wasn't just a blanket disparaging of maybe Trump supporters, that they could get into medical care and gender identity and all these kinds of things in a very nuanced way. But unfortunately, a lot of people who support Trump and who believe just flatly in the Roseanne Barr character on Roseanne just believe that it was sort of a proponent, an episode or a show that was basically promoting their values all the time.
Yep.
There was no nuance to it or discussion from what I can tell. And I actually saw somewhere on Twitter that some people believe that ABC greenlit the show Roseanne just so they could pull it later when progressives
really?
Got mad. I mean, it's just beyond the beyond.
That's interesting.
The other con about pulling this is that it does lose jobs for more than 100 people.
Yep.
So you had showrunners and you had actors on the show say that they loved working on the show, including Sarah Gilbert, who played Roseanne's daughter, saying the voice of one particular person on our show ruining our whole future on the second season doesn't seem fair, and we're really sad about it. But of course, that person is the namesake of the show.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I'm really not buying it. So there's a difference to me between the idea of, you know, Sarah Gilbert and Laurie Metcalf and John Goodman making a choice to come back to this show as professional working actors who are all have options, right? And the crew members who maybe don't have the luxury, the economic luxury to say, oh, I'm gonna pass on this one. Like, if you have to feed your children, you're gonna work on the Roseanne show, right? And the thing to me about these actors who are now like, oh shoot, we are so surprised that she went off the deep end. Like, did y'all not have the same internet I have had right. for the last 2 years? Because if you did, you knew exactly who you were getting into bed with and whose platform you were signing on to promote.
Yes, and this is not the first time this has happened. There have been other times when Roseanne has been interviewed where the other cast members had to kind of mitigate some of her more inflammatory remarks and kind of blow it off as just, oh, that's just Roseanne. And that doesn't stand for what we stand for. But if you're working on a show, and I will say that I was surprised to hear Roseanne was coming back and to see that John Goodman was going to be on it again and Sarah Gilbert and Laurie Metcalf, actors who I really like, well, not as much Sarah Gilbert, I felt, well, okay, maybe they know something I don't. Maybe there's going to be a good discussion around this show. But it seemed to be kind of going for the lowest common denominator quite often. At ABC, Channing Dungey is the first African-American head of programming at a major broadcast network, and she has been responsible for joining up with Disney to bring Black Panther to audiences, to have Doc McStuffins, which is a cartoon, which I think you said that you're familiar with.
Yeah, we love Doc McStuffins at
and
my
it's
house.
African-American girl who wants to be a doctor, and her mom is a doctor.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And also, Viola Davis heads the ABC TV series How to Get Away with Murder. So Channing Dungey is seen as sort of a powerful influence on ABC right now, which is why probably Roseanne was canceled, because ABC has started to position themselves as a diverse voice in broadcasting, and I think it would seem very alarming if they didn't take a stand against Roseanne's racist, bigoted comments. The cynical view of this would be that action was taken swiftly this time because they knew that they had to cut this off at the pass with the advertising dollars that could be removed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth observing that this is a company and that their goal is to make money. And so they kind of draw the line arbitrarily in terms of what they're going to be offended by based on how badly they think they're going to be punished for allowing it, not on whether or not they think it's ethically okay, because it's not like it is just one person making that choice, right? They have to consider like all of the different points of view in their viewing audience, and that's a pretty diverse viewership.
And
so when ABC canned the Conners, there was this Twitter eruption from a lot of conservative voices that, oh, so Roseanne gets canceled for expressing her personal opinion, but progressives want football players to be able to express their personal opinions in their workplace. And how is that substantively different? So do you ever have like a moment where you're reading something on the internet and all of your blood drains from your brain into your punching muscles and like the only place in your brain where the lights are still on is your brain stem where you're like, no, you're stupid, shut up, I hate you. Oh, what do I do?
That's kind of where
I was for like a good 10 minutes reading these. I was like, that's not the same.
It's not the same.
But I had to kind of like take a breath, shake it out, get some blood back into my brain. And then I realized why it is not completely the same. I could verbalize this again.
Let's hear it.
Okay. So about a week ago, NFL owners decided that if any of their players wanted to take a knee on the field, that they would be subject to penalties and fines. Now, this is not entirely surprising because the NFL has been extremely resistant to the whole take a knee protest ever since Colin Kaepernick started it. They did say, of course, that if players didn't want to salute the flag, that they could stay in the locker room during the national anthem and come out after the fact, which I think really demonstrates how dedicated they are to racial justice. Like, they're super on board with protests as long as they don't have to see them, hear about them,
stay
or
inside the
think
bunker.
About them.
Yeah. We'll see you later when you want to play for us.
Absolutely. So, when you've got NFL players who are protesting the unlawful murder of Black people by the state, and they are engaging in a nonviolent protest to call attention to this long-standing, incredibly damaging, unlawful murder, that is in adherence with their First Amendment rights to protest nonviolently and enjoy their freedom of speech. When you have a comedian tweeting racist hate speech designed to draw attention to how funny she is and how Black long-term harmful Black stereotypes are actually really true, according to her, that is hate speech, which is not protected by freedom of speech and is not something that we all need, that's not a hill that we all need to be dying on,
mm-mm.
Right? So when you've got football players who are using their platform to call attention to murder. Great.
In a nonviolent way.
In a completely nonviolent way. They're still doing their job.
Yes, they're still fulfilling their contract, but they're 100%. Making a personal statement.
Yes. And then on the other hand, you've got a racist comedian saying racist shit on Twitter. Like, no, that's not okay. It's okay for there to be a social consequence for that. It's okay for her to get fired for that. She still has her Twitter account. She hasn't been shadow banned.
No, and actually, why does she still have a Twitter account?
I don't know.
Why hasn't she been taken off of Twitter?
Stormy Daniels was shadow banned for being an alive human who has sex sometimes. Like, why is Roseanne still on
crazy.
There?
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, she was asking for it. Yeah, I think it's interesting also to point out that, like, the tweet that Roseanne sent out, all of the racist garbage that she puts out there on Twitter, like, that actively hurts people. That contributes to a society that is hostile to people of color and Jewish people and Muslim people.
Right.
I mean, she is that is an act of violence, putting that out there into the ethos with the tremendous platform and microphone that she has. A football player kneeling at a football game should not hurt your feelings. Like, unless you're a cop who loves to shoot black people, or you love a cop who loves to shoot black people, this kneeling protest is not looking to take anything away from you, right?
Yep,
like, civil rights is not a pie that we have to slice smaller if we invite more people to the party. Everybody can have it,
right? Everything can change. Just because it's uncomfortable now for certain people to see people kneeling during the national anthem doesn't mean that it's not an important form of protest. I mean, lots of civil rights wins have occurred after a lot of discomfort. Dr. Adolphus Beck Jr., who's a professor over at Winthrop University in South Carolina, was asked about his thoughts about this form of protest. And what was interesting to me is that he said that they have other ways of protesting. Of course, they can take a knee, they can use a fist, you know, up in the air. They can have abstention and a boycott. They can do all of those things to kind of make their purpose known, and it's symbolic. And he says it's more than just symbolic, though. It's life and death for black people, for black Americans. He said, quote, black folk know quite well that it could just as easily be them in any kind of a violent situation with police enforcement. There's no amount of economic attainment or success that's going to isolate you from this kind of treatment. So for those reasons, the issue will continue to come up. Because very famous players on the field have been assaulted off the field for being black while driving or being black while at a party. So being a famous player of some kind of sport does not insulate you from racial bias.
Yeah,
profiling.
I'd also really love to give like a tip of the cap to our dear leader, President Trump, for turning this into black people versus the military and black people versus the flag
and black people versus our country.
Versus America.
Isn't he also saying, President Trump is also saying that those people should just be kicked out of our country?
Yeah, he did say actually that he disagreed with the NFL owner's decision to allow players to stay in the locker rooms because if you don't want to get out there and salute the flag, then what are you even doing in this country? Well, I'm being a fucking American, Mr. President. I'm allowed to not salute the flag. That is not
That's right.
mandatory written into the Constitution. Thank you very much.
And what better platform in a nonviolent way can someone have than someone who's looked up to by children, who's followed by adults, who's watched on TV while they perform these amazing feats athletically, than to say that the current operations, the current enforcement of black people is not okay? I mean, that's the perfect platform for it.
I totally agree.
And at least now we're talking about it.
And I think our next step is next time President Trump tweets out some bananas bonkers shit about like the fake news failing New York Times, spreading fake news about my awesomest hair ever, so sad, we should just decide, just like we did with Roseanne, that's the line. And at that point, Congress should just be like, that's it, impeached.
Okay.
Done. That was the last one. I know he's done it 40 times before.
You're saying
this
maybe,
week.
Maybe they have their little list of when Trump does X, Y, or Z. We're done.
I'd love to see Trump's president contract, right? Like, what did you have to sign in order? Like, what was unconscionable according to you? I don't know.
Not much.
Nothing.
Not much.
Hi, I'm Sarah Leibovitz, a producer at Large Media. Do you love listening to the hilarious and insightful tones of Katie and Ronit on the regular? Wish you had more podcasts to fill your commute the other 6 days of the week? Well, be sure to keep your eyes and ears open, because the Large Network is coming your way. Learn more at larjmedia.com. And remember, when you want to go big, go large.
Am I allowed to say Ireland?
How many drinks have you had before you say Ireland?
Well, I say it kind of subtly, so it looks like I didn't really mean to say Ireland, but I'm trying to get away with it. And then my Irish friends were like, no, you can't do that. I was like, but I was just, no. Not okay.
Nope.
They heard it.
It's okay. Hands off.
So we have some news.
We're not local news. We're not doing Irish voices.
Okay. We have some really good news from Ireland.
Yes. Ireland successfully repealed its abortion ban, which was a huge deal.
It was very huge.
It was pretty huge. Ireland is a traditionally Catholic country, which means that this is not just a conservative political departure, but this is also a very serious cultural shift for Ireland. And so many women, thousands and thousands of Irish women, actually flew home from other places where they were living so that they could vote to end the abortion ban.
The case that made the most news was the case of the woman Savita Halappanavar, who died in 2012, and she became sort of posthumously the face of this movement because she was pregnant and she wanted to have an abortion because she was miscarrying and her body was becoming septic. And because of the law in Ireland, she was not allowed to have this abortion because they couldn't yet see that she was becoming septic. They could not see any kind of repercussions physically from this, and so they refused the abortion. In the meantime, she became sicker and sicker and she died. And had the laws been in place for her to be allowed this abortion without having to prove a giant list of medical conditions, she would have survived. So what was bracing about this particular protest and this law that was just now banned was that there was her face all throughout Ireland at these marches, that her face was just on the wall. It was painted everywhere. It was for her. Another prominent case in Ireland was in 1991 where a girl was raped by a neighbor. She was 14 years old, possibly 13 when she was raped, and she wanted to get an abortion. And this drew a lot of attention. It was called the case of X or X case. And she was not allowed to get an abortion, and her family wanted to take her to the UK to get an abortion. And when the government in Ireland found this out, they tried to stop it. Eventually, they wanted to use the DNA from this fetus to prove that the neighbor had raped this girl. Ultimately, this 14-year-old girl miscarried, but this case became an extremely polarizing case in Ireland. So now we have today where we can say the ban has been lifted.
Well, and it is such, because as we started the segment, we were both really excited. I mean, I'll speak for myself. I was really excited about talking about this abortion ban and this huge step forward in a country where a lot of women have not had the ability to defend their own lives. But as we start thinking about the reality of what this means for, like, how many lives have been lost up to this point that were preventable, like that death was preventable.
Yeah,
it was so preventable. And you could really see, I mean, in the images and the videos that were coming out of Ireland around this vote, you could really see how committed these people were, predominantly women in the crowds. I mean, you could see like the fire and steel in them as they were showing up to exercise their right to vote on something that honestly they shouldn't have even had to vote on.
No.
Like,
and they voted, they actually voted by 66%.
Yeah, which is, in a Catholic country, like, that's a huge margin. That's a huge margin to win like
that. So while people were celebrating this win, which is an amazing win, and I mean, we were talking about how if Ireland can allow abortion, then things can change.
Exactly.
If Ireland can be this beacon of hope for women and for autonomy over our bodies, then maybe, just maybe, things can change here in this country or in other countries.
Exactly, because this is not the first step that Ireland has taken toward more socially progressive policies. In 2015, they also voted to legalize same-sex marriage, which is awesome. And divorce is now legal in Ireland.
Right.
Like, that's what we're talking about. Divorce was not legal until recently.
Right.
It's really exciting to see people like dragging their conservative government toward progress.
Right.
And it makes me hopeful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just like ABC canceling Roseanne. It makes me hopeful that there is hope. So another little tidbit of hope, Eric Greitens, who is my favorite Republican to talk about because he's just been accused of sexual misconduct.
Oh, no. Oh. Didn't you read the AP headline?
Go ahead. Oh, yeah.
It was an extramarital affair scandal, not abuse or assault or sexual misconduct.
Yes,
or
and so like Greitens
it was a scandal.
Yeah, so yeah. Eric Greitens is a Missouri governor, and he resigned. He just resigned this week on multiple criminal investigations and impeachment impeachment talk.
Yeah.
And he was accused of sexual assault of his hairdresser and blackmail of her. And he also may have used campaign finance incorrectly. So his quote upon his resignation, and I just want to remind our listeners that he stands for family values. He's part of the GOP. He said the last last few months have been incredibly difficult for me, for my family, my team, for my friends, for many, many people I love. He says he was the victim of legal harassment, and he says, I have not broken any law or committed any offense worthy of this treatment. And I feel like the treatment that he's talking about is that he got discovered.
Yeah, get off the stage, Greitens. Like, you're done. You're done.
You know, it's
you're
good.
Done.
I'm glad you're going. It's
Bye.
About time. I've devoted about 3 episodes overall to you, and I'm so happy.
No, I'll make heart space for your friends in like 10 years. Please,
yeah.
Go away.
Now we have amazing video to show you of a rescue in Paris. An immigrant from Mali is being called a real-life Spider-Man.
I need a hero.
Oh my God.
I'm holding out for a hero till the morning light. And he's gotta be tall, and he's gotta be strong,
and he's gotta be fresh from the vines.
From Molly. I was gonna say he's gotta be fresh from Molly.
I just swooped in to be the unexpected third.
I'm holding out for Mamadou.
Okay, Mamadou Gassama is a 22-year-old born in Molly who now lives in France. And he was on his way to watch a football game and saw a crowd gathered around the front of an apartment building, looked up and saw a 4-year-old child dangling from a balcony, and neighbors in the neighboring apartments trying to reach over and grab the child. And he said he didn't even think, he just climbed the building, which is what I do when I don't think. I just climb buildings.
With like, a lot of bounce in his step, he kind of like sprung.
Yeah, note to self, more jump squats, more push-ups. Check. He did this amazing, like, gymnastic scaling of the side of a building.
It was amazing.
It was remarkable. It was really remarkable to see. Just popped right up there, grabbed the kid.
Grabbed him right over the edge.
Man, in the video, you can hear people like,
yep.
Like, they're so excited. And, you know, it's so nice when you see a child not die.
Yeah. It's also so nice when you see a whole bunch of people excited about that and, you know, cheering on someone like this who took a chance and used all of his strength to help. And Emmanuel Macron also recognized him.
He sure did. He recognized him by inviting him to the palace and gave him a thing, an
a
award
certificate
of some
of
kind.
Gold award seal.
But the real reward was citizenship. Mamadou Gassama is now a French citizen.
Just like that.
Yep, just like that. And so that to me, like, I was like super excited about this whole story. I was like, yeah, Memorial Day weekend, fun news, woohoo, baby didn't die.
Yep.
And then I heard that he got citizenship and I was kind of like, oh. Not because I didn't want him to get citizenship. Like, I want to make sure that's really clear. I think he really deserves to be a French citizen. I think he did something remarkable and exceptional. And
also he's been invited to work on the fire brigade. He's officially going to become a fireman.
Yep. A Parisian fireman.
Just like that. 22 years old, prime job, citizenship, fame. And I guess the issue that struck me, and I think you too, Katie, was that it's an amazing, powerful, positive reinforcer to give him citizenship for this particular act.
Yeah.
And I wanted to believe strictly in it as a good deed, you know, from Emmanuel Macron, sort of to promote this kind of amazing citizenship, right, from immigrants. But there is a sense, just a little bit of a sense of what a good immigrant.
Yes, exactly. Oh my God, you just, yes. I've been trying to put my head around that, what you just,
well, you
what
have
a
to
good
say
immigrant.
It
that's
the way
exactly
I say
that's
it.
Exactly.
And then you have to say it with that tone.
Oh my, what a good immigrant you
Yeah, it's a little like that.
Yes, it really bothers me, because if he hadn't happened to be there that day, what would his path to citizenship have looked like? It would not have been like, you're a person of value who deserves opportunities, come on up to the front of the line. It would have been like, get to the back of the line, you have to wait for years and pay thousands of euros, just like everybody else, right?
And probably live in super low income housing and probably be in a position where you're not going to get a leg up. You're not going to actually have an opportunity right away because you're an immigrant and you don't have a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, this really reinforced the idea of the like exceptional immigrant myth.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, just kind of this myth of like American exceptionalism. As I was thinking about this in the context, I've obviously never been a French immigrant from Mali. I also have never been an immigrant to America, so all of this is coming from a place of observation. But I think, you know, we, from the earliest age, we have this idea drilled into us that, you know, if you work hard and you're smart and you're good, then you're going to be rich and successful. And on the one hand, there's really nothing wrong with using that kind of language and like life lessons to encourage people to work hard and study hard and do good things.
It's sort of an American idealism.
Sure.
It's part of the fabric of this country.
Sure. But the flip side of that is If you're poor or struggling, then it means you're lazy and stupid and bad. And that is the problem that we need to start addressing, because Mamadou Gassama had an opportunity to be exceptional. He had an opportunity to be brave and good, and he took it and he was rewarded for it. But that's not because we've become so much more progressive in terms of immigration on the world stage. It's because he played into this narrative that good people deserve citizenship and not good people don't deserve citizenship. And that really, really bothers me. You know, I was thinking about when President Trump was captured on tape, although he didn't actually say that. He was captured on tape calling Haiti a shithole country.
Mm-hmm. And calling immigrants from certain countries animals.
Yes, exactly. This, you know, this idea of American exceptionalism is the great grandpappy of that shithole countries and animals like verbiage. Because when he's saying immigrants, what he's actually saying is like brown and black, poor, non-English speaking, breeding, criminal, leech succubi immigrants.
Wow.
Right? Like that's what he's actually saying. It's coded that way.
Yes, yes, yes. Because and what kind of immigrant do we want? What kind of immigrant would we want in this country? Well, first of all, maybe he wants white immigrants.
Yeah.
Maybe Trump wants white immigrants.
Trump wants white immigrants.
And immigrants who have education or are going to contribute right away.
Definitely speak English. Definitely English speaking. Mm-hmm. Wealthy.
Yeah.
Maybe bringing some contacts from Russia with them would be a nice perk, nice bonus. Put that on the form.
Yeah.
Yeah, check that box on the immigration form.
So while this was a story that just an amazing story, the takeaway for me was how amazing to save a life and to be recognized for it. And I understand what the French government was doing. They want more of this. They probably want less immigrants who do things that are not so awesome.
Sure.
Right? It's sort of a message. But immigrants are people who want to move to a country, and they're all very different, just like we're all different people.
Yep.
And they can't all be held to some superhuman standard. They're just people who want a better life, and this man was in the right place at the right time and had the skills, and so he achieved, I would say, greatness. But all immigrants can't do that.
Exactly. And, you know, your human rights are not something that you should have to earn by, again, doing your push-ups and your jump squats and having the rare once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to save a child from dying. You know, your human rights are there because you're a human.
Yep.
All right. Okay.
Do we have to talk about him?
It's time to talk about Jeff Sessions. Okay. So in April, Jeff Sessions announced that there would be a shift to the way the Department of Justice approaches illegal border crossings.
So he said he's going to criminally prosecute 100% of people crossing the border
illegally.
Exactly.
Before Jeff Sessions made this announcement, if a family was trying to immigrate into this country without documentation, without kind of going through the legal immigration process, what would happen is they would be detained at the border together as a family, then they would be cited a civil penalty, given a court date to go to a civil immigration court, and either released or deported together as a family. Now, that is not what's happening right now. Because of this April announcement that Jeff Sessions was going to now criminalize illegal border crossings.
For children and families. Children do not get away with not getting prosecuted.
Exactly. But what's happening now is that the adults who are apprehended in these families who are trying to cross the border, they're taken to a criminal detention facility, which is what's necessitating the removal of children from their parents at the borders, children as young as 12 months old taken away from their parents. There's been a lot of coverage on this, and honestly, it is absolutely devastating to talk about. And so I want to dig deep less into the heartbreak of that than into how this relates to immigration policy overall.
And for context, the Border Patrol caught about 38,000 people at the border in April of this year, which Politico reported was a little bit, it's like three times the number from 2017, but still less than the last couple of decades in general. And Jeff Sessions' statement about this new policy was, we don't want to separate families, but we don't want families to come to the border illegally. He said, this is just the way the world works. But
it is if you make the world that way.
Right.
Like, whoa, my hands are tied. I just initiated this brand new policy that's going to fuck up people's lives profoundly. Like, I cannot even handle the, like, whoa, what happened?
Right.
You know what happened. Also, Trump tried to blame Democrats for this.
Yeah, recently.
No, dude, this was all you.
Yeah, well, previously, if people had been detained, they were allowed to stay with their children. And this is, I guess, part of Jeff Sessions' way of deterring more immigration. And a lot of people interviewed, a lot of the immigrants who are being held separate from their children, have said that they would not have come had they known that they would be separated from their children, because it's a very new policy, and some didn't find out until they got there, and some have been separated. There was a story of a woman who has a 6-year-old blind daughter and a son who's about 8 or 9 who's been kept about an hour away from them. So she thinks about her children all the time, and she has no idea how they are.
You know, I would think twice about ringing your doorbell to sell you Girl Scout cookies if I knew that you were going to punch me in the face when you opened the door. But that doesn't mean that's like a logical thing to do when the Girl Scouts ring your doorbell.
And like, it's very alarming. One man who had a 13-year-old son, the son was shipped over to Chicago for holding, and he's in the Southwest. And he says they cried so much when they separated them.
Of course. This is like such an unconscionable violation of human rights that is happening right now in our borders. You know, just a month ago, after the whole Kanye West slavery was a choice thing, I actually watched 12 Years a Slave because it made me think about, like, when was the last time I really engaged in the idea of slavery and the historical facts of slavery? I was in school. You know, it's not something that I have chosen to put into my life. And I thought, you know what, I need to really revisit this. I need to check it out. And the scenes in which the children were taken from their parents at the slave auctions were absolutely harrowing and devastating. And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, and the ACLU
on our borders.
Yeah, the ACLU has mentioned, so there's a lawyer fighting this case, and his name is Lee Gallant, and he's suing the administration on behalf of all these separated families. And he says the law does not remotely require the administration's family separation practice, not at all. And the administration is trying to shift the blame to Congress, and it's the choice of the administration to do this. And the law, though it's been in effect for years, it's only the administration now believing that it should be required to separate the families. That was like ridiculous. Yep. But what you're basically saying is that, okay, so if you have a country where people are in danger because they're being stalked by a gang, you know, they're coming to our country because their businesses and their lives are in danger. One woman told a story about someone who worked for her business. The employee was killed as a threat to her own family. So she and her husband and their children decided to come to our border. And the idea of coming to the border for safety and then knowing that they're going to take your kid away defeats the whole purpose of having come to a country for safety and asylum. It's everyone's right to ask for asylum. It's not our domain to separate children from their families.
Absolutely. And this just goes right back to what we were talking about earlier about this like bootstrap mythology. We're like, well, if these immigrants were well educated and worthy of us, America, the great nation of America, then they wouldn't be arriving on our door trying to sneak into the country for safety. They must have done something wrong. They must be stupid. They must be lazy. They must be criminals. And this entire idea that, like, if they were worthwhile, they would appear worthwhile to our, like, racist society. It's at the heart of why we're not in the streets right now protesting this incredibly unconscionable, inhumane treatment of human beings at our government's hands.
Right. And
Like, do we all know people who are smart and hardworking and have been successful? Yes. Do we all know people who are smart and hardworking and have not been successful and are struggling in poverty, whether that's because of a disability or an illness or a family tragedy or an addiction?
Extenuating circumstance.
Who knows what could happen? Natural disasters. I mean, in Puerto Rico, we're going to be seeing a lot of smart, hardworking, worthwhile human beings who should not have to do anything to convince us of the fact that they are all of those things.
And human.
And human beings deserving of clean water. Right? I mean, we're seeing all of those people just completely ignored. I mean, FEMA's gone. The president's not talking about it. Nothing's coming for them. I mean, good thing Lin-Manuel Miranda's still at the helm, because seriously, that guy's driving change in Puerto Rico, and he is an amazing hero.
Yeah, but I do want to add one little other wrinkle to this, is that so some of these children who are separated from their parents are placed with relatives or people somehow connected to the families, but the Department of Homeland Security is proposing immigration checks on these homes, on these families, and to see where these kids are, which will discourage people from taking the kids or from even checking in, because if they don't have citizenship, they're not going to come out and kind of announce that. So it's really a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
Absolutely.
Mama do.
Mama do. That's something. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Okay.
You just heard Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory with Katie
and Ronit,
a Large Media production. That's LARJ, large. If you like this episode or want to follow up on anything we talked about, come find us at facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory or tweet at me, bro. yeah, that's a good one. I'm at @mouthypodcast on Twitter. Thanks for listening.